welcome back to Real Perspective, the podcast based on a YouTube channel based on a podcast. I'm your co-host, MJ Smith. It's been a minute. This is our first new episode of 2024, and you can tell I'm not redoing it because it's a new era.
Yeah, it is.
We are shifting. We're doing a seasons model, so we're going to do 8 to 10-ish movies, depending on what we feel like, I think. Maybe more, maybe less. Who knows? And once again, bi-weekly, but we're starting this off with because it's sort of a reset for the show. We're doing a little get to know you season. So each of us picked two films that were highly influential to, our journey into loving movies and our continued love of movies. Corey picked two movies that he saw late into even hosting this podcast. And we're talking about them, and we're going chronologically. So that's the order we're going, just the year that they came out, earliest to latest. And that means that this week we are talking about a film that Missy picked from 1974 called Young Frankenstein, written and directed by Mel Brooks, co-written by Gene Wilder, who also stars as the titular Young Frankenstein. It also stars Terry Gar, what's his name?
Marty Feldman.
Yes.
Yeah. How dare you?
Peter Boyle, Clovis Leachman, Madeline Kahn, Gene Hackman has a cameo in the movie. I am all over the place.
Yeah.
Gary's my boss.
Gary Hackman. Gene's dad.
Gary Hackman. That's what I call him because we're close personal friends. It's a retelling of Frankenstein by Mel Brooks and Gene Wilder in that style. Follows Frederick Frankenstein, Frankenstein. We'll get into that.
Yeah.
following in his grandfather's footsteps to reanimate a corpse. It's shot in black and white in 1974. One of two films that Mel Gibson... Or Mel Gibson.
Goodness.
Jesus.
Whoa. Whoa.
Good Lord, guys. One of two films that Mel Brooks directed in 1974, the other being Blazing Saddles, which is wild to have a year like that.
Also an excellent movie.
Yes, also very good. Missy, why did you choose Young Frankenstein?
Which also, before we jump in, we didn't introduce the rest of our other co-hosts.
We sure didn't.
You know what?
We're going to do it live.
I'm done. I'm walking.
We'll do
I'm
it
quit.
Live.
This is...
We'll do it live.
And we didn't count down either to clap.
No, we did.
We did? I didn't hear it.
Did you guys hear blink? It?
I heard
yeah.
it. I clapped.
I did too.
Okay.
Oh, I totally did.
Are we starting over?
No.
I think we need to start over.
We got to roll.
I like it. Unedited. Let's go.
Okay. Yep. It's Missy's. It's Missy's episode.
Would you guys like to introduce yourselves?
No.
I'm Michael Morey.
I'm not Missy Lawnsinger, so I must be Corey
That's also
Tindall.
Out of order.
I was waiting for somebody to go, so I just took it over.
That's fair. Yeah. I'm Missy Lawnsinger, and this was my first pick. This was a hard assignment, to have to think about the movies that most influenced us in whatever way that means, and to only pick two at first was super hard. I think that was the case for you guys as well, right? It wasn't right off the bat we all knew immediately what we wanted to do.
I had one. It took a while to come up with a second one.
Sure.
Yeah, it's hard to determine influence you in different periods of your life, and if you're thinking oh, it affects me creatively, or just it
right.
was influential in my childhood. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it took me a while. I actually just changed my other movie before we started.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so I for me, my second one that we'll talk about later was an easy first pick because it was the movie that made me like movies. But in thinking about this one with Young Frankenstein, if I'm viewing my life and me as a creative is one of those red string serial killer boards. So many of those red strings are coming back to this movie, specifically because of Mel Brooks, Gene Wilder, and Madeline Kahn. As an actor, I have written and directed before, although I'm predominantly an actor, so much of my comedic sensibilities have been influenced by them. Madeline Kahn is like, well, and Gene Wilder, they're like two of my favorite actors of all time. I think their command of their faces, their bodies, whatever language accents they're employing, just everything, their comedic timing is so, like, it always hits with me. Even in some of their worst movies, I still love them. Like, they're rarely, if ever, the fault of anything bad that they're in. So that was a huge motivator for me, but also just Mel Brooks, and specifically with this movie, because Frankenstein is my favorite novel, and so this adaptation of it done by Mel Brooks is just so clever, it's so smart, and that's what I think I love about Mel Brooks and why I wanted to pick this one. He, more than a lot of comedy writers and directors that I've watched, I think really does a nice marriage of, like, he's a super, super clever man. Like, you can tell he's really smart, he's really well read, and a lot of his jokes are a little more like, require a little more higher level of intelligence, but he also will throw in, like, a freaking fart joke. Like, so he plays mm-hmm. to, like, all levels of audience, which I really appreciate. And he does it in a way that just feels very seamless to me, where, I don't know, it's just, like, you could be at any, like, walk of life, any point, any level of intelligence, I think, and find something really funny in a Mel Brooks movie, but particularly in this one. So, yeah, I think it's a genius film. I love it from start to finish. Just a huge, huge influence, lots of red strings as far as if I'm looking at my own comedic sensibility specifically as a creative. So that's my short spiel on why I picked this one. Had you guys seen it before?
I had seen bits and pieces of it before doing this assignment.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, right. I never saw all the way through. Yeah,
really surprising.
Yeah, I don't know. I have, like, big blind spots when it comes to Mel Brooks, actually, which I need to go and catch up on.
That is also surprising.
Yeah, I mean, like, obviously, I've seen, you know, Men in Tights and mm-hmm. Spaceballs, mm-hmm. Blazing Saddles, and I've seen adaptations, like, on stage of the producers, but I've never actually seen the movie version of it. So yeah, there's some holes I need to go and fill in. And I've seen, like, a lot of, like, little skits and things like that here and there that he's done, obviously. So it was good to finally see it in context.
Yeah, what'd you think?
I mean, I think it's good. I like
Wrong
it. Sorry, I know. I'm starting off on a bad note.
Get out.
No, I mean, like, I think the thing is with, like, a lot of Mel Brooks stuff is he set the tone for, like, parodies and comedies and stuff like that so much and so well that I it's not like a laugh a minute for me. I mean, there's, like, a lot of, like, chuckles and things like that. There's, like, a lot of cleverness, but, like, is it gut-bustingly funny to me anymore? Some of his stuff just in general is not so much. Like, I used to love Spaceballs, for example, when I was a kid. Yeah. That's, like, before we had 5,000 parodies of Star Wars.
Right.
You know what I mean? And it's just, like, some of those jokes, just, they're not as hilarious to me as they were when I was younger. But I actually think that this is maybe better paced than some of those. Like Blazing Saddles mm-hmm. is another, like, obviously good movie, but there's some parts I think that are a little slow, some jokes
it
that take
drags,
a little long.
Yeah.
The end in particular takes a long time, and it's like, mm-hmm. all right, yeah, I get it.
Right. Yep. Exactly. And then this, I feel like it moves at a faster pace. It doesn't seem to get bogged down. So I think it actually aged maybe the best out of some of them. But it's not like my favorite comedy or anything like that by any means. But I see the appeal of it. And, you know, I enjoyed it for what it was.
Fine.
Yeah. This is so I grew up kind of loving Mel Brooks, particularly Spaceballs.
See, that's my least favorite Mel Brooks.
It's probably not that good anymore, but, like, as a kid who loves Star Wars
sure.
and Weird Al, like,
it's perfect.
Like, I haven't seen it since I was a kid, so it probably does, like, I imagine it not holding up.
See, I watched it as an adult for the first time, and I was like,
No, the freaking John Hurt, the alien, the chest burster bursting out of John Hurt's chest and him saying, not again, and then it takes off and then comes back and does, hello, my baby, hello, my darling, hello, my ragtag. That joke, like, that still makes, thinking about that joke still makes me laugh. Like, I think it's great. But, yeah, I mean, so with Young Frankenstein, I didn't see it until I was either right before I graduated high school or right after I graduated high school. But I saw it, like, my late teens, early 20s.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is the perfect time to see Young Frankenstein.
Yeah.
And,
I was also a teenager, I think, when I first saw it.
Yeah, it is a movie, particularly like as someone who, you know, you, growing up, you just kind of know Gene Wilder from Willy Wonka.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get to see him do, and like, I think most kids who see Willy Wonka like that movie, but then you see him do something like this, and you're like, oh, this guy is the real deal. Like, he's so good in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just one of those movies that I've always like circled back to. It's in heavy rotation around like Halloween time for me. I watch it a lot.
Sure. But
it's one of my favorite movies to show to people who haven't seen it, because I think there's like, I think this movie just still works. Like, the pacing is good. I think the jokes are good. Like, it is so fun to watch someone else watch this movie who hasn't seen it before. Mm-hmm. And that's the appeal to it these days for me. On top of that, it is like, I think it is in the pantheon of like quotable comedy movies.
Oh, yeah.
Like, as far as like, you know, right there next to Anchorman or something, right? Like, it's just so clever and such a fun spin on this story. Like, I didn't rewatch it in the week leading up to this because we just did Frankenstein on Let's Jaws for a Minute, my other podcast, not to self-promote, but here we are. And the reason why I didn't watch Young Frankenstein is because as soon as I got done watching Frankenstein, I immediately put on Young Frankenstein, and that was like 2 weeks ago. So it's pretty fresh in my brain, and it was cool watching it as someone who's like, I've seen it a handful of times at this point, but my roommate didn't even know what it was. And it just like captivated her and she loved it. But I also watched it with my girlfriend, who it's her favorite movie.
Aww.
And like, to sort of like get the experience on both ends of that was really great. I didn't know it was her favorite movie until we sat down and watched it. And then I was just like, oh, you know every word of this script. And she was like, yeah, I've probably seen this movie 100 times and I'm not joking.
Wow.
And
it's super rewatchable.
So, yeah, I think it is really, really, really rewatchable. But Mel Brooks is one of those guys that like, I just love silly people.
Mm.
Like, I love people who are silly because of how smart they are.
Yes. Yes. Like, 100%.
That's my favorite type of person, and that is such a formative style of comedy to me, right? Like, thinking about the influences in my life that have kind of shaped my humor as it is today. It's like the Mystery Science Theater guys, Animaniacs, Conan O'Brien, Weird Al Yankovic, and Mel Brooks. Like, those are probably the top five, right? Where it's just like, oh, these guys are clearly, one, really, really smart. And because they're so smart, they're the dumbest people alive.
Right. That's what I was trying to articulate. I don't know if that came across, but yeah, no, 100% same.
Yeah. And so it just, it's always going to be a movie that makes me laugh really hard, I think.
Nice.
Corey, what about you?
Yeah, this is my first time ever seeing this movie. So.
What? Was it really?
Yeah. Yeah.
What?
Yep.
What did you think?
I enjoyed it. It was a good time. I echo a lot of the things that you guys are saying. Like, I feel like it's very, the humor is very clever. And then, you know, every once in a while you'll just get like kind of a fun, just like silly joke. But yeah, I enjoyed my time watching it, and I was like, oh, okay, I get it. Like, I get why people like this. So I was super interested to, you know, do this podcast and hear all of the, like, the love and the history that all of you have with this film. Because I'm like, yeah, like, kind of similar to Mike, I feel like I kind of have a blind spot for a lot of Mel Brooks stuff. So I was like, oh, yeah, I've heard people talk about that they love Young Frankenstein, but I've never seen it. So.
Yeah, it's really good. I think the idea of doing a black and white Frankenstein, I think that's the biggest thing, is like the commitment across the board, right? Like, everyone who has made this movie is just sold out on the idea.
Yep.
And I think that's what makes it.
Yeah, actually, so when I first saw like large portions of it when I was a kid. I actually thought it was an old movie.
Oh, yeah.
When I was really young. Yeah. Like, I had no idea it was made in like 1974 or, you know, something like that. It, like, I thought that it was legitimately a movie from like the 40s or the 50s. Yeah. And so, it, because they really do commit to the bit. I mean, they shoot it in the style where, you know, you could conceive of
it. Yeah, it feels
in,
like it. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, you know, the kind of camera angles, the lighting. Like, he does a really good job actually appropriating the style of that kind of film without like generally breaking it, which is impressive. Like, because it's not just a matter of, oh, you just turn it black and white, you know, you film it in color. It's like filming something in black and white actually requires like a deft touch. You know, and filming in an old style the same way, you have to think about like, how would a camera work back then, and you know, how do the shadows and light interact? And so it's impressive from that standpoint as well. There's like definitely, like you were saying, MJ, a commitment to the bit.
Well, you know, also that's the same set that's in Frankenstein.
Yeah, I was reading that. Yeah, well, and the original guy who created it apparently didn't get credit for Frankenstein when he did it. And so when Mel Brooks got the like equipment from him, because they just had it in storage and stuff, like he finally was able to get credit for Young Frankenstein. Mm-hmm. So good for him.
That's awesome.
But yeah,
there's like a special thanks credit to him.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's his respect for, I mean, the source material and like you were saying, Mike, just that style of shooting and doing that, which apparently, like, I don't remember which studio they went to first, but when they said they wanted to do it in black and white, they were like, hell no. And so they're like, okay, cool. And then just went to a new studio because, like, people were fully against that. Even though it's like, it's perfect. Mm. It fits so well with it being in black and white.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no. I'm not surprised, given some of our complaints about producers across many episodes of this show, that they would be against an idea like that. But, you know, it's definitely something that might be off-putting to certain audiences, but I think the people who are in on the joke appreciate it more.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I appreciated the fact that, you know, it's kind of, you know, it's like spoof parody territory, but it feels very much like you guys have mentioned, like it honors the legacy of the film that came before it. It's not like trying to subvert it or like tear it down and be like, hey, I have like a better way to do it. Or it's like, hey, it was so stupid, like how they did Frankenstein. Like, we're going to just like mock it. Like, it doesn't feel like that. It feels very like, yeah, we know, like,
loving.
Yeah, it feels very loving. We couldn't do what we're doing without that movie. Like, how it paved the way for this. And, like, this is very much, like, a way to honor that movie. And I really appreciate that, too, because there can be styles of humor where very much that's not the case. It's just about subverting stuff and tearing it down and being like, oh, they suck. We're better. We're doing it this way. So, I really enjoyed that, watching the film. It's like, oh, okay. Like, they have a very, you know, they're having fun, but there's a lot of respect being paid to the original Frankenstein.
Yeah, I feel like, so obviously Mel Brooks does like a lot of parody, and you bringing that up, Corey, it makes me think like his parodies aren't usually mean, because parody and satire stuff can be very mean and very pointed, but in all the things that he satirizes or that he makes a parody of, like, you can see the respect there, where it's, like you said, it's not like I'm trying to make fun of or do a better version of this or point out its flaws. It's just like, this is something I enjoy, and because this is my specific field of craft, like, this is how I'm going to honor it, which is through, you know, comedy and parody.
Yeah.
I mean, I think you see that reflected in the attitudes of Weird Al, too. Like, it's
absolutely.
Yep.
Very rare that he is actually, like, making direct fun of the artists. And the one time I can think of that happened, they were on board, and it was Nirvana. And like, sometimes I think also if he will poke fun in a sort of mean-spirited way if he deems it worth it. Like, there's like his Jerry Springer song can be kind of mean, but that's obviously like something that kind of deserves it. Like, that was it. If he views it as a net negative,
right.
he's gonna go after it. Like, in the song Couch Potato, he goes after a bunch of the reality TV shows of the early 2000s, right? And so, yeah, I think it almost feels like Weird Al kind of picked that up from Mel Brooks, because, you know, not to take the Mel Brooks podcast and make it the Weird Al podcast, but like, the thing that makes his music good is that his band is good. Right? Like, he is a good musician. That's what makes good comedy music, like him or Flight of the Conchords, which is not really a parody band, but it is that they are good songwriters and musicians.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's still comedy music, right? Yeah. But if they're not good at what they do, it just is bad, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's just lazy.
Like, you can't suck and be like a parody of something.
Right. Yeah, and like we proved that when we killed the parody movie in the late 90s, early 2000s, and where it was just like, oh, I recognize thing, where it was like, no, you need to be more or less a student of this, right? Like, I would say that, like, one of the things that we're, and like, I hate this, you know, comedians hold up a mirror to society type of thing. Like, I get it, but it feels a little pretentious given what comedy does and is, but it does, right? Like, it, there's this idea that it opens up the window, right, to let some air into certain topics, and that's like but like, I think one of the things is that they're a good barometer for like where culture is at, and I think that's something that people like Weird Al and Mel Brooks have been really great at over the entire course of their careers, where like you can check into any Weird Al album and it's a history of pop music from the early 80s to the late 2000s. Right, like he has outlasted almost every single one of the artists he's parodied, and it's because he keeps coming back not just to make fun of it and be mean, but to sort of like update everyone on where we're at with the way pop music has evolved in the last half decade or however it's long been since he's done a record, right? And I think Mel Brooks at the time, not just at the time of that, but Mel Brooks over the course of it just kind of comes back. Like, he's in a similar vein. He comes back with like, here are the lessons we've learned from this thing 30, 40 years on, right? Mm-hmm. Because the two movies he releases in 74 are style parodies of films that were popular in the 30s and 40s and 50s.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so he comes back, you know, 20 years after the fact of these things, kind of like dropping off in terms of popularity and being like, okay, here's why we liked this though, right? Like, here's the reminder of what this was and why it meant so much to us as like a culture in the moment that these things were made. And he does that by applying the same techniques that they used to make those films.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think this is a really good point. I mean, I think just in general, he has such a love of cinema, you know, in everything about it. Like, obviously, the producers goes and shows he's got like knowledge of how the business works. But yeah, when it comes to showing how to like make a Western, but then also lovingly deconstruct it. Make a black and white movie, but also, you know, lovingly use some of its tenets for its own appeal. You know, the fourth wall breaking in a lot of those movies, like, you know, Spaceballs, where it's like, you captured their stunt doubles, you idiots, you know, and it goes and cuts to like the stunt double. Like, he has like such a knowledge of like the language of film and the history of it, which really comes across, and you know, also comes across in this movie as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, and you know, he also, right, he made Silent Movie, which is a parody of silent films, and then he made High Anxiety, which is a parody of Hitchcock.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Right? So he's always been, like, right there doing that in a way that I think few other people have been able to do it besides, I would say, the Zuckers. Like, they're the only ones who have been able to successfully do that in a film. I guess you could say Weird Al with his recent film and UHF.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, yeah, but, yeah, and his music videos. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Yeah, like, they're the three who have cracked parody in the modern age of pop culture. And, like, it's kind of only them.
Yeah.
Like, some people have had one-off, like, parodies that do work okay. But, like, as a, like, if you were to call them, like, a parodist the way you would use the word, like, a satirist.
Yeah.
They're the only three I can, the only, like, I guess four because the Zucker brothers. But it's the only, like, handful of creatives I can think of that, like, cracked it, right?
Because, right, right. With like, a body of work.
Yes, with their body of work, because like Top Secret is like a parody of some James Bond stuff, but also leans into some like Cold War, like Russia shit, and you know, Airplane is a parody of disaster movies, that were popular, and right, the Zuckers also did the Naked Gun movies, right?
Yeah, yeah,
I think so.
Yeah, and like those are like police procedurals from the, you know, 60s and 70s that they're making fun of. And so, yeah, they're the only three groups of people that, like, came back and were like, this is how we poke fun at it, but we know the ins and outs of it so much, and that's what makes it funny. And that, mm-hmm. I think, holds up. Have you guys seen the 1931 Frankenstein?
Yes.
Yeah.
I've seen parts of it. I've never actually seen the full thing.
So I hadn't seen it until I watched it for the podcast a few weeks ago, mm-hmm. and it made so many jokes in Young Frankenstein make so much sense.
Right.
Man, I haven't seen it since I was a kid. You'll have to explain why.
I remember, like, the little girl, that was the one, like, when I saw the clip of it, and I was like, oh, that's in Young Frankenstein.
Yeah, so in Frankenstein, you know, after the creature escapes, he starts, like, he happens upon this little girl, and she's, like, doing a, like, he loves me not thing with a flower. And she sees the creature, teaches him how to, like, take the petals off the flower and put them in the water. And then he, like, the creature, not knowing any better, after they're done with the flower, picks the little girl up and throws her into the water, and she ends up drowning. And that's, like, the catalyst for why the town goes after the creature, right, in the back half of the movie.
Yeah.
And so in this, it's him coming across the little girl in the well, who's doing the same thing. And then she's like, we're out of the flower. What do we do now?
Just
and Peter Boyle
camera.
Just, like, looks at the, just looks at the camera.
It's so good.
It's so good. Because in Frankenstein, and this shocked me, I could not believe this is in a movie in 1931. You see in full view of the camera him pick this little girl up and just yeet her into the water. And so it is, like, it's a rough moment in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it was cut when it was re-released, like, after the Hays, because Frankenstein is a pre-code movie.
Mm.
And so it was cut for subsequent re-releases of the movie, which means that most people who saw Frankenstein saw a version where there's an awkward cut after the, like, little girl is done showing the creature how to do the he loves me not thing. And then the parent of the kid, like, holding her dead body. And it's like, wait a minute, he killed her, right? Like, it's a twist. And so this is a parody of that cut of the movie, because a print with the scene intact didn't get found until the 1980s at the British Film Institute.
Wow.
And so most people who had seen Frankenstein at that point had only seen the edited version. And that joke is a joke about the edited version of Frankenstein. But mm-hmm. then if you're a film history buff, you also know that it was edited after the Hays Code. So you know that that look into the camera is, like, more of a jab at the Hays Code than anything else. Mm. Right. And so knowing all that, like, the joke is funny in context, and then knowing all that, it's just like, whoa, there's a lot of layers to that one single joke in this movie.
Yeah.
Right. Well, that's what he does so well. It's like what I was, again, trying to, like, articulate is, like, On a base level, it's funny. It's like, because, you know, he's a monster. Mm-hmm. He could throw her in. It's funny that he's doing that look to camera. But then, like you're saying, if you dig deeper, the comedy goes so deep. Like, he's got these deep-rooted jokes that you can appreciate on, like, so many different levels, which is just, it's so brilliant and such smart writing.
Yeah, I mean, even, right, like, showing off the creature at the end, right? Like, that's a King Kong parody, right? Of
putting on the ritz.
Ritz,
which was apparently,
right?
Like, Peter Boyle improv. Like, they didn't know what amazing. He was gonna do, and he just went put on the ritz. It's
yeah,
so good.
And he's the MVP of the movie. You know, Frank Boyle. In my opinion, I think Frank Boyle is, like,
Peter Boyle.
MVP.
Peter Boyle.
Oh, sorry,
he
Peter Boyle.
Frank
sorry. Yeah, I think that he's the MVP of the whole thing. You know, Gene Wilder obviously has a lot of fun and stuff like that, but, like, the physical acting that comes from Peter Boyle is fantastic.
Yeah, it's Marty Feldman for me, man. I think Marty Feldman is,
oh my god,
so,
he's real good too.
He is so funny in this movie. That is, like, it might be my favorite comedic performance of all time. Like, he is he is so funny, and so, he's like the Bugs Bunny of Young Frankenstein. Yeah. Like, he does a joke and then gets this like "ain't I a stinker" ass face after he does every punchline. Man, he's good. He's good in this movie.
I read that he also improv the hump thing when it moves. That was the thing he had been doing on set, where he would adjust where it was, and it took like a while before the casting crew noticed that he was moving where the hump would go. And so Mel Brooks loved it and just wrote it into the script. Where it's like, wasn't that's that awesome. On the other side?
That's so good. Amazing. What hump?
Yeah. Oh, Marty felt so great. Good. Corey, did you have a favorite performance in it?
I mean, he was great. He was kind of like, I feel like the secret, like, not secret, but like he was kind of the understated, like, oh yeah, like he's not Frankenstein, but he was really funny, surprisingly funny. And then, yeah, I mean, like, I enjoyed Gene Wilder in it. I mean, like, I feel like there was a good handful of jokes for everybody to kind of get like a moment, you know?
Yeah. Well, an uncredited Gene Hackman who just wanted to try comedy. And is amazing as the blind or whatever he is.
Yeah, that scene was like, when it started, so I was like, this is so random, but like, this is hilarious.
Yeah, isn't that, that's also in the original Frankenstein, right? Doesn't he encounter a blind man?
Bride of Frankenstein.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, but then just the literal implications of a blind person serving you food and drink and just pouring it all over him.
pours it in his lap. Oh, God. That scene's so good. I love the guy who's the sheriff,
yeah,
like with the wooden arm.
Oh yeah,
he gets a lot of really great jokes. Like, there are countless atrocious accents throughout Frankenstein 1931. So to like have a character that's the embodiment of that, I thought was a really smart touch. Like, I didn't understand that was the joke of that character. Like, I just thought they gave him a silly voice, right? And then you watch Frankenstein 1931 and you're like, oh my god, no, there's terrible accents that are hard to understand because it's a bunch of American people trying these accents and being really bad at it. And so to have a character representative of that, it was like, oh no, the man did his homework, which is funny because like he's quoted as saying that he didn't want to do the movie because there were 1,000 Frankenstein movies already. And then Gene Wilder was like, well, what if it was like his descendant? And he was like, and he's reluctant. And Mel Brooks was like, no, that's a good hook for a Frankenstein movie. We'll do it. And that's how like it came to be. So to see that he went from being reluctant to doing it to then being like, well, if we're going to do it, we need to do it right.
Yeah. Oh, it's so good. I think Gene Wilder is my favorite in it, but it's hard. It's like, I don't even know, like picking a favorite cookie out of a batch of amazing cookies. It's just because I think my favorite thing about him in it is he plays such a good comedic straight man in that he is technically the straight man usually, because there are zanier characters in almost everything he's in, but he's still so freaking funny.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's a really hard thing to do, because usually in comedy you have your, you know, your role and you kind of stick in that lane, but he marries both of those so well, like right off the bat, even in the beginning when he's like teaching his class and like stabs himself in the leg. It's just like everything about his performance is so good. Oh my gosh. I love Gene Wilder. He's amazing.
He has one of my favorite jokes in the movie, which is when he tells the old guy to hop up and he goes really slow. He just goes, nice hopping. Hop. Like, such a good line, and it's so understated. But then when he has to go like full mad scientist mode, I mean, he's one of the best to ever do it. Like,
oh yeah,
it's just so committed across the board of like whatever the role needed of him, he did it. And like, you know, he's really good in Blazing Saddles. He's really good in the buddy movies that he did with Richard Pryor in the 80s. I don't know if you guys have seen any of those.
Yeah,
but they like a surprising comedy duo, right, that just shouldn't work but kind of does. See No Evil, Hear No Evil, Silver Streak, and I think there's one more that I think they did three movies in the 80s, and they're like just like buddy road comedy movies that have sort of a mystery element to them. And like, shouldn't work but totally do. I think people, because he's so straight so much of the time, people don't think Gene Wilder is a comedic actor. but he totally is.
Yeah.
Oh, speaking of his pair-ups, have you guys, I mean, I think I know the answer, but have you guys seen The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes' Smarter Brother?
I've not.
Okay.
No.
It is worth checking out if you like Young Frankenstein. If you, I mean, I love Young Frankenstein, but, so I don't know. It's very bizarre. It's another Gene Wilder, Marty Feldman pair-up where he is Sherlock Holmes' older brother. Or younger brother, and he's like sick of him getting all the fame, and Marty Feldman is like his Watson, and Madeline Kahn is also in it, and I think Dom DeLuise is in it. It's just, and it's surprisingly not Mel Brooks, but it's a very similar feeling, with a lot of like really smart jokes intermixed with a lot of really stupid jokes, but it's very, very good. So if
Gene Wilder directed it.
I'm sorry?
Gene Wilder directed it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
And he wrote it. He wrote and directed it.
Yeah, that sounds right. But yeah, definitely check that out if you liked this and you liked that pairing of Gene Wilder and Marty Feldman, because I think they are just magic together.
So, he's like in that special class of like comedians that knows how to like knows where the line is and not how not to like overstep it. Like, and like he's not annoying. Like I know that like this is a completely different kind of comedian, but like John Candy, right? Mm-hmm. Like also somebody who like. He can make like a wacky character in that, but he's always like lovable in a way and not annoying in the way that like a lot of actor like comedians in the 90s and stuff like that just feel like this like focus on being annoying as hell. Like Jim Carrey, for example, can sometimes be entertaining, but man, some of the stuff that like came out in the 90s with him was just like freaking annoying, man.
Yeah.
You know, and people since then, but like there's like a lovable, affable quality to people like Gene Wilder and stuff that I feel like is kind of missed.
Yeah. Steve Martin, 100%. Early Steve Martin shit.
Yeah. He's also in that category. Thanks for bringing that up. Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah. You know, sometimes Rodney Dangerfield in that era, you know, right? Yeah.
Well, I'm thinking also like Billy Crystal in When Harry
Met
Sally, right? Like sure. It's not an over the top performance at ever, but he's goofy as hell, you know. Mm-hmm. Like he's very it's pretty understated as far as like a comedic performance goes, but I don't think anyone would say he's not really funny in that movie.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And you know, and he doesn't become obnoxious or exaggerated in a way that's like grating. You know, and that's what I think allows these things to kind of age better. You know, and like, for example, I like a good Will Ferrell movie, but there's some Will Ferrell movies are just very hard now.
Yeah,
I feel like
agree.
It's like, oh man, so annoying.
Yeah.
You know, it's just that some of that stuff, it worked for the time perhaps, but looking back on it now or revisiting some of these things, it's just harder to watch.
Yeah,
I agree. I think that's why I think Marty Feldman's so brilliant in this movie too, though, where it's just like he would be the annoying character, but he plays it so like the timing of it is so like precise and perfect that it just it works, right? Where if it was Jim Carrey playing Igor, it would be way broader than it is.
Yeah.
But it's like Marty Feldman plays it so dry, right? Like and it's just like these It's also this shit in comedy that isn't supposed to work, where it's a lot of like no's, like him saying no to something, and that's the joke, right? Like what hump is a denial, which we are told doesn't work.
Yeah,
and then
the opposite of yes anding.
Yeah, it's the opposite of yes anding, and he's still like, he's doing like comedic gymnastics as far as I'm concerned. This whole movie, like there's the scene where the wolf howls and he goes werewolf, and G Wilder goes werewolf, and he goes they're wolf, and he goes why are you talking like that, and he goes I don't know, I thought you wanted to talk like that. He goes no, I don't want to talk like that, and he says suit yourself, I'm easy, and it's just like he makes everyone he's in the scene with look like the a-hole when he's the one who instigated it. It's so funny, and it's so backwards from like what you're used to seeing in comedy, because it is like a denial instead of a yes and it's really good. Like damn your eyes, too late, right?
Yes.
Like he's not letting the joke get across from the other person, and so he's hijacking it and making it his own. It's so good.
Mm-hmm. but it never feels like upstagey. Like it still all flows. Mm-hmm. At no point does it feel like, oh God, why didn't they rein him in? It's just everything fits so perfectly.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
It's so good.
Yeah, he's still second banana, right? Like, he still lets Gene do what he needs to do when he needs to do it.
Yeah.
And that's what prevents him from being annoying. Like, he's never, yeah, like he said, he's never one-upping Gene Wilder. And Peter Boyle's never one-upping Gene Wilder. Like, no one, like, they're letting him be the star of the thing, but then he also is the, it's really, really tough. Like, we just started watching this completely different kind of show, I suppose. have you guys heard of this show called Girls 5 Eva?
No.
I have heard of it, yeah.
Okay. It's from that same, like, 30 Rock, Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt team.
Oh, okay.
Which, like, those are two of my favorite comedies, like, recently. So it's about, like, a 90s girl band in their 40s trying to get back together.
Okay.
And it's got, like... Paula Pell, who wrote on 30 Rock, is in it, so she's a comedy writer. And Busy Phillips, who like has been had a career in like TV comedies, Freaks and Geeks is probably the thing people recognize her from the most. But then the two other women in the group are Sarah Bareilles and Renee Elise Goldsberry from Hamilton. Yeah.
All right. Well, the last two intrigued me, so I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Little Sarah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was weird because, like, I don't picture Sarah Bareilles having a silly bone in her body for whatever reason. Like,
that Community episode, though.
She's super funny. If you see her in concert and stuff.
Is she?
Yeah. The puppet one.
The puppet one.
Okay, there's an episode. Well, I think it's in one of their worst seasons. But yeah, it's the entire episode almost is done with them as puppets, as they're recalling something that happened, like the dean's helping them. Yeah, and Sarah Bareilles is in it. She is the hot air balloon person.
I don't remember that.
And she's super funny, like at her own shows and stuff. Like she'll just kind of do like little bits in between her songs, and she's very like. It's like hilarious. It's like, oh, I thought I was here for a show and they're doing a little mini stand up.
Well, didn't she help write Waitress?
The Broadway show? She wrote all the music for it.
She's clearly got like a penchant for, you know, performance and comedy and stuff.
Yeah.
Huh. All right. Well, that kills my whole point. Anyway, they make her the straight person. They make her the straight person, and I was like, oh, that's a good role for her.
Mm-hmm.
But then she does get a joke, like at least a couple jokes every episode that really make me laugh. So she's surprisingly good at it. To me, surprisingly, I didn't know she was capable of that. But I'm also not like, I couldn't tell you anything she had done besides the music for Waitress and the love song song. So there's that. And then, Renee Lee Goldsberry is really good in it, too. But they are definitely the... Renee Lee Goldsberry slightly less, but they're the two kind of straight people, while like Busy Phillips and Paula Pell get the bulk of the like silly comedy in it. And like I think you can tell that it's Tina Fey, obviously, but then what's her name, Meredith Scardino, I think is her partner that she does all these shows with. You can tell that they were kind of brought up in this sort of genre of comedy. Cause like, if you watch Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, like it, like Carol Kane being in it, like she's right there in that. There's like, it's like Carol Kane, Terry Garr, Madeline Kahn, and Bernadette Peters are like the four horsewomen of 70s and 80s comedy. That's really silly in my brain. So you can tell that they definitely, are steeped in that same school, which means that they have to have a solid straight person or else the silliness isn't going to work around them. And letting Gene Wilder be the straight person is great, but they give it, and they do it in Blazing Saddles too. Like, one of my favorite Mel Brooks jokes of all time is the "yeah, but I shoot with this hand" joke in Blazing Saddles. I don't know why that, like, that joke is just really, it's a really solid joke to me. It's obvious, but it, like, Gene Wilder's so great at selling it that it works. And I mean, he was nominated for the producers, and it was his second movie ever.
Yeah,
you know, And yeah, it's just and it doesn't not work, right? We're like, he's saying goodbye to Madeline Kahn, and she's clearly the comedic driving force of the scene, right? Mm-hmm. Once again, denials.
Yep.
Right? Like, he's trying to kiss her and she's saying no.
Yeah.
Because, like, yeah. X thing.
Tough it, darling.
And then that, right? Where he's hugging her and she says taffeta darling and he says taffeta dear, and like that's a good joke.
It is,
but he's still the straight man in that moment,
right?
That's hard to do. That's really hard to do.
Yeah, I think that's why, like, when I look at my own, you know, life as a creative, and God, I don't like saying that, that sounds pretentious and stupid, but you know what, we're creative, no, so I'm gonna say it. But yeah, just his ability to, like, to shift gears so seamlessly, to understand that you don't need to play up the joke so much. Because, I mean, we grew up with a lot of 90s comedies. Jim Carrey has been mentioned. A lot of the comedy, I feel like when we were younger, at least a lot of the ones that I remember, it was so broad. And sometimes it worked really well. But a lot of times, like, especially now revisiting, it doesn't work as well. It doesn't age as well. Like, he was such a patient actor and so patient with his comedy. Mm. And being willing to be very understated, but then playing up something really big if he needs it, but then also just understanding comedy comes in so many different forms other than just these broad jokes. It's just, yeah, and that's, I mean, if I could dream, my career as an actor would be to even remotely emulate any of that, but that's definitely something I aspire towards and something I really respect about his performance, especially in this.
So, yeah, this is a question I've been forming for you, specifically because Missy, you're the one who picked this film.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons you picked it was Madeline Kahn.
Yes.
She's not in it that much.
She's not.
She's great in it. Mm-hmm. But why this over something like Clue, where she's in it a lot?
So I think Clue is a better showcase of her talents. I would say even Blazing Saddles and Adventures of Sherlock Holmes' Smarter Brother are better showcases just because she's on screen more. This was more of, she was a part of a culmination of the fact that Gene Wilder and Mel Brooks and in just the movie itself are all things that I love. But even though she's not in it that much, like, I think she commands a scene so well. And this is such a good example of that because her screen time in total is what, like maybe 5 minutes or something? I don't even know. But every time mm-hmm. she's on screen, like, she still makes me laugh, and this is one of the most understated, I feel like, characters that she has. Because if you think of, like, Mrs. White, who's, like, insane in Clue.
Right.
Still, you know, still a lot of, like, understated comedy, but just, like, it was literally, like, psychotic. Her character with the bonkers-ass German accent in Blazing Saddles. It's, like, she can be very broad and do these really big things, but this was really understated. I mean, of the women, if you think of her and I forget the actress who plays Inga, and Cloris Leachman, like, she's Terry the straight Garn. Man. Oh, thank you. Yeah. She's like the straight man of the women characters
mm-hmm.
for at least a lot of the scenes. And that to me is so admirable because I think she holds her own with these like comedic giants because Gene Wilder, Marty Feldman, Peter Boyle, all incredible in this. She goes toe to toe with them without having to do much. And that to me is just like, I love it and I respect it so much because it would be so easy to just be a nothing, standing up next to these men, and not like it's a man or woman thing, but standing up next to these actors, these performers who are giving so much. And I feel like even though she's not necessarily going over the top with what she's doing, what she's delivering is so good and so strong. I don't know if that made any kind of sense, but to me, the understatement of what she's doing, there's so much strength in that, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? Mm-hmm.
No, that makes
yeah.
sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Because, like, she definitely does not get the most to do in this movie at all.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Not just screen time wise, but as far as jokes, like, Terry Garr's really broad
right.
in it.
Of course, Cloris Leachman, very broad.
Is, like, very broad in it. And Madeline Kahn, who I'm used to seeing go really broad,
mm-hmm.
is not as much, right? Like,
yeah.
Have you guys seen Paper Moon?
No. I need to.
I need to see Paper Moon, first of all. That movie rips. It's so good. But It's a film that I just caught up with like last year sometime, just on a whim. Once again, Corey, like, we'll talk about it on your episode of just like, this is a blind spot for me, and I like weird 70s movies.
Yep.
And yeah, that movie is so good. But Madeleine Kahn's in it, and she plays it, like, the film is not funny. It is funny, but it's not like this funny.
Mm-hmm.
And her character isn't necessarily funny like this funny, or funny like Clue funny,
mm-hmm.
but she's really funny in it. And she's not like, it's not that she's not supposed to be funny. It's just that the character could be really dour and serious if mm-hmm. she had played it a different way.
Mm.
And she doesn't, and it's not over the top and it's not broad, but she's really funny in that movie, but she's also really good at playing up kind of the heinousness of it. Like, she plays a bad person in that movie, and it's not parody. It's kind of brilliant. Like, I thinking about it, it's hard to put into words. You got to see what she does with the role in that film specifically, but she's really great in it, in a role that could have been very annoying or
yeah.
very mm-hmm. mean
mm-hmm.
or very like left a bad taste in your mouth of in what is largely a lighter toned, like, dramedy, I guess, for lack of a better word.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And I think one of the things we've been driving at over the course of this episode, like, Mike, you mentioned it, we don't, for whatever reason, we don't let our comedy performances be layered anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they just have to be one thing and one thing only.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, this is a film where characters run the gamut start to finish,
mm-hmm.
and it feels more complete and whole as a result.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think allowing different people to flex different ranges, you know, it makes it better, and it holds up better than this thing that's just like one tone
mm-hmm.
all the time that everyone shares. So I think it's a good point.
Yeah, it's so much of the same flavor. Have I told that story on this podcast?
Mike,
were you there for that? When we
sounds familiar.
We challenged Peter to eat an entire large bucket of popcorn at a movie.
I heard this. I remember this story. I don't think I was there for it, though.
Okay, we challenged Peter to, who's a guy we knew from high school, to eat an entire large bucket of popcorn at a screening of Ocean's 13. And it was just us at the theater, and at one point I looked over at him and I was like, Peter, how you doing? And he looked at me and he went, it's so much of the same flavor. He was like halfway through it.
That's a pretty good quote, though. It's very applicable to life.
Yeah, truly. yeah. It stuck with me.
Hashtag like hidden deep meaning.
Yeah, because yeah. it's true, right? Like, you go see like an Anchorman. Like, it,
yeah.
Not an Anchorman. Anchorman, I think, is the exception to the rule.
Right.
Yeah.
Like a Will Ferrell movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty broad, and it's pretty much the same. Like, the character's the same the whole movie. It's always at like 11. And
mm-hmm. right.
if you watch a film like this, like, it's up and down, or like a Christopher Guest movie.
Yes, that's what I was just mm-hmm. thinking.
Yeah, like those characters. And I think that has a lot to do with like giving them the freedom to improv over the mm-hmm. the course of the script. But like, you know, Spinal Tap is pretty understated. Like, everyone is playing that movie
mm-hmm.
deadly serious.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it works because of how deadly serious they're playing it.
Right.
Whereas, like, if you made Spinal Tap now, it would be closer to something like Popstar, which is, I think, really great. I think it's still a really great modern comedy.
Mm-hmm.
But Popstar is very in on its own joke. And this
yeah.
is Spinal Tap. The joke is that nobody involved in this is Spinal Tap is, like, in the fiction of the film, in on the joke.
Mm-hmm.
Right, right.
Yeah.
No one's treating it like one.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Well, that's a good point.
Yeah, and I think that's why something like the Weird Al movie that came out last year was so refreshing to so many people, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
everyone raved about how great that movie was once they saw it, because it is this broad parody movie, but it's also, like, and it's really silly. And
yeah.
it but it's still like it's not like bombarding, right? It's not loud, it's not annoying, it's not like it's not just bells and whistles the whole time. Like the base of the movie is solid.
Yeah, that's a good point. On the other side of the coin, though, I do feel like Mel Brooks' movies in general, a lot of them do feel like they're of their time for me. I just think that comedy in general it's hard to make like a movie that like withstands the test of time. And you know, you mentioned one earlier, like, you know, of those Will Ferrell movies, I'd say like Anchorman is the only one that really holds up still.
I agree.
You know,
maybe Talladega. I don't know.
Yeah. Talladega.
Much like Christopher Nolan, I have a big soft spot for Ricky Bobby.
Yeah.
But there are definitely like some excellent scenes in that. Yes, you know, but then like I try to watch, you know, stuff like Caddyshack or Animal House and things like that. And I'm like, I kind of see it. Yeah, but
they're harder to watch. I would agree.
Yeah. It's like long portions of those movies where I'm like, okay. You know?
I've never seen, Corey, you're going to be mad at me. I don't think you know this about me. I've never seen the Blues Brothers.
Really?
I've not.
Wow.
And my friends here have really been trying to get me to watch the Blues Brothers with them. But it's a 2-hour and 12-minute comedy, you guys.
Yeah.
It's from the 80s. Like,
with not like a ton of laughs, in my opinion. It's charming. You know, that's the thing that like a lot of these like have.
Yeah.
I think you hit on a good point, though, Mike, in that it is hard to make comedy that's, like, ageless, because obviously our comedic sensibilities as a society, I mean, comedy in general is already such a specific thing as far as whether or not it's gonna touch with somebody, but then if you're looking at the comedic sensibilities of the time, like, I mean, you guys are mentioning, like, 80s comedies in particular, I think a lot of them have aged really poorly. Even like Blazing Saddles, I was really fortunate enough to get to go and watch a screening of it with a talk back with Mel Brooks, and he's even said,
"Oh, sick! That's awesome." Wow.
Yeah, no, it was amazing. And he had even said, he's like, "There's no way," like the obvious statement, "There's no way it could have been made today," just because so much of it just goes against our sensibilities as a society and the lack of humor that Gen Z has when it comes to irony or anything like that. But I feel like Young Frankenstein is an exception to that. Like, looking at the jokes, there's nothing that really places it age-wise, which is why, I mean, Mike, you had even said you thought it was, like, an older movie, or whoever had said that. Like, it could have been from the 40s, it could have been from the 70s, it could have been from now, because the comedy just works. It's inherent things that are always going to be funny that aren't reliant upon the specific time or, like, a specific, I don't know, type of thing that you have to be aware of or, like, being aware of in the cultural zeitgeist. It just works.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say I've seen quite a few of the Mel Brooks movies like that I've previously seen, like over again, in the last couple months. And you know, there's definitely a couple that have not aged well. Like I was mentioning before, like Spaceballs. Each time I watch it now, like the less funny it gets. When I used to think that was like the greatest thing.
Men in Tights is bad. And,
I haven't watched it in a while.
It's not good.
Yeah, I was obsessed with Men in Tights when I was like a kid, and I've seen some parts of it since then. I'm like, ooh, this isn't so good. But this is probably the one that has aged the best out of them. I agree.
I think it's his best film, in my opinion. But that shouldn't be a surprise since I picked it.
Yeah, I haven't seen the 67 producers, and I haven't seen History of the World Part 1, but I don't think that my opinion would change.
They're not better.
Yeah.
And I really like the producers, but it's not better. And I'll just leave it at that. You can watch them, but I think you'll agree. I don't think they're better than this.
I think it's hard to get better than this movie. I think it's just it's so smart. It's so fun. It's so easy to watch. It's so like, it's so steeped in what it is. Like it knows what it's about. Right. Which another thing the Weird Al movie did great. Right. Like made no bones about like what it was about. And I think a movie that's like that, that's what goes a long way with audiences who appreciate comedy is like, if you're committed and sold out on your idea, like that's going to make it funnier 10 times out of 10. I think.
I
think like, you know, we've kind of knocked guys like Jim Carrey and Will Ferrell in this, but I think that's what has made the movies of theirs that work. That's what makes them work, is because I think that like for as maybe kind of obnoxious as they can be, they are never not sold out on mm-hmm. the idea, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think yeah. that helps a lot. But it's just that, like, their version of being sold out on the idea is just being at 11 the whole time.
Yeah.
And this era of comedy is, like, having more peaks and valleys in order to, like, let the tension release.
Sure.
Let it build back up and then let it release again. But yeah. there's still like 1,000 jokes a second in this movie, right? Like,
yeah.
I don't think anyone would say that there's a lack of jokes.
No. You know,
per minute in this movie. Like almost everything in it is a punchline.
Yeah.
And it never feels like it's working too hard to make it a punchline.
Yeah. Which is pretty impressive because it's not like, oh, we're trying to set up this joke and all this stuff and whatever. And then, like, is it going to, like, it just feels very organic. Like,
yeah. They're almost like throwaway. It's like, you know that there's so much craft that went into it, but it's yeah. done so, like, effortlessly that it's like, oh, here it is. There it goes. And it's like, but it's so yeah. funny. Like, even, like, the Frau Blücher joke, which, like,
oh, yeah.
is another one where it's, like, even if you don't know what that means in German, it's like, it's just a funny bit. Because she looks, you know, horrendous and scary, and every time you say her name, you know, the horse is winning. But then when you learn that, like, Blücher means glue in German, then it's, like, an additional layer of, like...
Oh!
Oh.
See, I didn't know that.
Your mind just blown? Today you learned? No. You're
that's hilarious!
See, yeah, that's what I'm saying!
I get the deeper layers.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so. That's why the horses are scared of her.
Yeah, because she's
oh,
glue.
That's so good.
Yep, it's amazing. Mel Brooks killed it. And
that's
she's just
amazing.
Great.
That's so good. Also, way to low key flex your Duolingo.
Thank you. I'm 579 days of German, and I've learned the word
yeah,
glue.
So one of the things that we do at work. Is we'll be in a meeting, but apparently there's some I don't know anything about business, you guys. Like I work a corporate job, but I don't, like, whatever. And
punk rock
and so one of the things that we have to do if we have like an issue we need to solve is we have to put it in something called a four blocker. I couldn't tell you what that is, but my brain hears Frau Blücher every time.
Oh.
Every time funny. Someone's every time says someone in a meeting says put it on a four blocker, immediately I hear the lightning and the horses
and the whinnies.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Every single time, like the first time I heard it, I was like kind of half paying attention because the meeting really didn't concern me at all. But I was just like, "What? We're talking about Young Frankenstein? I'll talk about Young Frankenstein with you guys." Yeah. Do you guys have anything else about Young Frankenstein?
No, I mean, I think it's a good movie. You know, while I maybe sounded like a little indifferent to some things, like Mel Brooks in general, like had a big influence on my life. I should have probably said that like up front with the ones that I did see, you know, and he was like a trailblazer in terms of like comedy and parody and things like that. And so, you know, I respect like this choice a lot, actually, because, you know, along with you, MJ, I would say, you know, Weird Al was, you know, a huge influence as well in the Zucker Brothers and that sort of stuff. So, like, you know, that's probably like the trinity of like that parody impulse that I have in my own movies. So I really respect it. And this is definitely the one I think that has aged the best of the lot. And that's also because it takes a smart tack in terms of making itself timeless. So, yeah, I definitely recommend it.
Yeah. Corey, do you have any final Young Frankenstein thoughts?
No, I mean, I enjoyed it. Like I said, my first time seeing it, and yeah, it, like, you know, I enjoyed it, and it was really cool just to hear all of your perspectives on it.
Hey,
just,
that's the name of the show.
Real
hey, that's the, yeah. You know, it was the setup the whole time. But no,
yeah.
But yeah, I really loved hearing all the background that you had on it, and it just helps me appreciate the film even more. Because I watched it, and I enjoyed it, and I could see that there was a lot of craft put into the jokes, and the performances were really good, and yeah, just hearing all this stuff kind of just helps it, you know, take it to the next level for me. I'm like, oh yeah, like I get it. And like I said, I have a pretty big blind spot for Mel Brooks, and so it's like, oh okay, like I get more of the, like, why people are like, oh, he's so good at comedy.
Yeah, he's amazing. I appreciate you guys going on this journey with me and watching this for the first time for Corey or rewatching it. But yeah,
it's great. It's great. I love hearing why people choose films and how that influences your creative process, or just like why it's important to you as a person. Like, that's so fascinating.
You know, it is. That's why I'm really excited for this season to get to hear your guys's, because, yeah, I mean, even in being able to talk about this, even though it was my pick, like, hearing some of the comedic influences from you guys, and, like, they're very similar to mine. Like, I would say, Mel Brooks, Christopher Guest, and the Pythons, but it's, like, it's all within a similar kind of vein of, again, smart humor. Smart humor that's not necessarily just relying on being mean or just relying on one type of bit or anything like that, but, yeah. But, no, I've loved talking about this with you guys, because I love this movie so much.
Yeah, it's great. Also, I think I'm about to embark on a Christopher Guest rewatch, because I found out that my girlfriend hasn't seen almost any of the Christopher Guest movies. And if Young Frankenstein is her favorite movie,
oh, she'll love them.
Yeah,
they're all so good.
Yeah, we were playing a board game the other day, and I said, "What happened?" And she just thought I was being dumb, and I was like, "Wait, have you not seen Best in Show?" And she was like, "No."
I love Best in Show. That is such a good movie.
Movie's great. It's great. Yeah, this is I think this season's gonna be awesome, and we are gonna change tones completely in our next episode with Corey's first pick, which is gonna be the just a couple years later, 76, I think.
Yeah.
Network. One of the greatest movies ever made.
Which I've never seen.
I would agree.
Yeah. I is there anything on here? I haven't seen The Straight Story.
I've never seen that either.
So nor have I.
Or Star Trek VI.
Nor have I.
Yeah.
Obscure Mike, picks on the way.
Yeah, Mike, do we need to watch any of the other Star Trek movies before we watch Star Trek VI?
Watch all and all of...
Oh, that was your other movie. I couldn't... Like, we were talking before, and I was like, what were Mike's picks? Yeah.
No, they're all standalone, but this one, you know, as long as you just have a general understanding of Star Trek, you're like, who Kirk is, you're good.
Okay.
Yeah, it gets you up to speed. That's why I think it's a good movie, because it all the stuff in it is just stand-ins for real world concepts.
Star Trek did that well.
Yep.
Missy, I hate to correct you in real time, but Blücher is not a word in German.
What the heck, I had heard that at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Where did I read that?
It is a type of shoe.
I definitely read it at some point, and now I'm like, where was that? Who told me that? Well.
Yep.
Womp womp.
A liar. Yep.
No, I really...
I believe you, Missy.
Missy just gaslighted all of us.
I gaslit myself, man. I played myself. I'm really trying to think of where I read that. I thought maybe Mel Brooks said it. Maybe it was a joke, and
apparently,
I didn't get it.
Apparently it's a common rumor. Like, it is...
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Also, news of his passing broke while we were recording this.
What?
Wait.
Which is not fun. Not Mel Brooks. Mel Brooks is still
alive. Oh, my God, MJ. Oh, I hate you.
In lieu of our normal sign-off, I'm going to say, until next time, we'll fight for you. R.I.P. Larry H. Parker.